Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code SPOTIFY for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify POS has everything you need to sell in person. Go to shopify.com/system, all lowercase, to take your retail business to the next level today. That's shopify.com/system.
If you're an athlete, you know the greatest motivator of all is the fear of letting your teammates down. After all, a team is only as good as its weakest link. So you owe it to those wearing the same jersey as you to be your best every time you step on the field. That's why there's no vape in team. When you vape, you can expose your lungs to toxic chemicals that can damage your lungs. If you're a step behind, the team's a step behind. Brought to you by The Real Cost and the FDA.
This is MuggleCast, the Harry Potter podcast discussing everything about J.K. Rowling's Wizarding World. Welcome to MuggleCast episode 343. I'm Andrew.
I'm Micah.
I'm Eric.
And we are joined by a guest this week. Kate, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much for having me.
It's nice to have you on. You are a Slug Club member over on Patreon. How long have you been listening to MuggleCast?
Since probably 2006.
Oh, love it.
It's a long time.
Let's get your fandom ID. What's your favorite Harry Potter book?
Probably Prisoner of Azkaban, but I'm also a really big fan of Half-Blood Prince. I really like the Voldemort backstory in that one.
Yeah.
What's your favorite movie?
Philosopher's Stone, which I don't know if it actually is released as Philosopher's Stone, but I'm Canadian, so I call it Philosopher's, not Sorcerer's.
Oh, okay. Well, maybe in Canada it was, because I know the book was.
Yes, it was.
What's your Hogwarts house?
I'm a Hufflepuff.
How about your Ilvermorny?
Pugwudgie.
That's a perfect pairing.
Yes, and I actually really liked the Pugwudgie. It says they are healers, and I'm a vet student, so I thought that was kind of fitting.
Nice. What is your Patronus?
M.A. Wolf.
Oh, okay. Simple enough.
Yeah.
And finally, favorite character?
I really love Newt Scamander. Again, like, I'm a vet student, so I'm a big animal lover, so he's my favorite.
Yeah. Well, that's a unique thing to look forward to in the upcoming.
Yes, I was very excited when they announced the Fantastic Beasts movies at the beginning.
So was Newt your favorite character before the movie series?
I always liked him. I'm also a really big fan of Hermione. But once they announced the movies and that we learned more about him, I've become a really, really big Newt fan. I dressed as him for Halloween this year, so.
Oh.
Yes.
Awesome. Oh, really?
I heard that Canadian come out when you said about. Anyway, it's nice to have you here, so thanks for joining us. On today's show, we are going to talk about Halloween and the Wizarding World. It is the season. We have Halloween this Tuesday, although most people were celebrating over the weekend. I know Eric and I went out. What were you, Eric, for Halloween?
I was Beetlejuice.
You looked freaky. I mean that in a good way.
Thank you. I won scariest costume at the Potterotica Halloween house party.
Eric is like a major fan of Potterotica now.
I'm a big fan of these guys.
We ran into them by accident. Like, now he's partying with them.
I think he just gets royalties every time he says their name on the podcast.
Well, you know, I actually, it's funny you mention this, I just guest hosted their Halloween special episode.
Oh, wow.
Which is, is not for the faint of heart. It is R-rated or worse.
Okay.
And I won't say any more about it, except you know where to find it.
See, it's, now he's plugging them again.
Halloween in the title. No. These guys are great. Danny, who's on the show, and Marco just did. It was the most well-themed house party I've ever seen. They had severed heads of mannequins or dolls or something hanging from the ceiling. It was real cool, but it's the way to do Halloween. I'll be celebrating Halloween all nice. Week.
I love how Eric always has like a really interesting story to tell. I feel like he does a ton of stuff out in Chicago. He's always on the move.
He does. It's like he's always doing something, and I'm just sitting here like, I just want to play Nintendo. And
I will invite you along, but yes, only once you've beaten Odyssey.
Yes, thank you. So that's potterotica.com/mugglecast.
No, get your discount. It's 20%. I think the website is down, but they're Potterotica Show on Twitter.
Okay. So I decided to do a Harry Potter themed costume. I like to do something original when I dress up for Halloween. And so, like, I went in a couple stores looking for inspiration, and just nothing was really happening. And then it sort of, this idea that I ended up going with kind of came to me randomly. I was like, well, I have a Slytherin sweater. What can I do with that that's original? And then I was like, what if I'm, like, every Hogwarts house? What can I do something with every Hogwarts house? And then I was like, oh, I know. I'll be an undecided hat stall student. So in other words, like, you get the hat stall at Hogwarts, and obviously everybody who listens to this show knows what a hat stall is. It's when the sorting hat can't decide where to put you, so you decide. But I was a student who was undecided, so I just decided to be in all four houses. So I had the Slytherin sweater, I had a Gryffindor sock, I had a Hufflepuff sock, and I had a Ravenclaw beanie, and I bought Harry Potter glasses too, just for an extra touch. And I also carried with me my Gryffindor and Slytherin House Edition books.
Oh, love it.
That's awesome.
Yeah, so it was fun. Like, I had to explain it to people, but once they got it, they were like, oh, okay, cool.
You
cool.
sound like a Hogwarts midlife crisis.
Yeah, what else am I?
Quarter life, Micah, quarter life. Give them the benefit of the doubt.
And I got all my stuff at Box Lunch. It's like the Hot Topic store. I think I brought it up on the merchandise episode. And when I went in there, they saw me looking at a particular house, and they were like, oh, are you Hufflepuff? Because I got plenty more Hufflepuff. I was like, no. Do you read Harry Potter? I asked them that, and then they were like, yeah, major fan. I was like, okay, perfect. So I'm trying to be a hat stall student, and then like they were totally game to help me out. So that was cool. But
I think that's funny.
So that was my Halloween.
Of course,
I'll
we
put
have
a
Hufflepuff
picture
stuff.
Of my
nobody buys that
outfit. In the were you just insulting Hufflepuff students?
No, never.
Hufflepuff's the best.
Unconscionable. Hufflepuff is the best.
And by the way, we asked a Twitter question, which we'll get to later on, about which house would you want to be in based on the house ghost, and Hufflepuff was by far the overwhelming majority because of the Fat Friar.
Yeah. Well, we've got pretty much Casper the Friendly Ghost as our ghost. So, it's pretty cool.
I would never insult. Ever.
Well, good. So, but speaking of costumes, we actually asked patrons to submit if they were dressing up as a Harry Potter thing for Halloween to send in their photos. And we actually got some really, really cool entries. We got a couple of Newt Scamanders, including Sarah. We had a McGonagall and Luna. Rebecca sent that in. And actually, there was an entire party, a house party, that apparently was planned in 2 days. This reminds me of what Andrew was saying about, you know, basically taking what you have and making it work. But this house party, I'm trying to find the... Yep, it was indeed Sarah Horning's Halloween house party. They had just every, like, room had a theme. For it for Halloween, so cool. Really looks like people got up to some great fun, over this weekend, and hope the fun continues through Tuesday. And also, Laura cooked some Sorting Hat cupcakes, which look
please
very tasty.
Please send them to the PO box.
Yeah, I always like costumes that are relevant. And I'm just thinking right now that next year, it'll be like Halloween next year will be about 3 weeks before Fantastic Beasts 2 comes out. So maybe even see even more Fantastic Beasts costumes around that time.
Oh, but super huge, amazing shout out, though, has to go to Natalie H., who dressed up as Harry Otter. Y'all know Harry Otter?
That rings a bell. Personally. Was that a YouTube video?
So it's one of, you know, one of those, I think it is on YouTube. I Googled it. But do you know, like, those parody books that they had come out that were, like,
oh yeah,
concurrent with the, I'm pretty sure Harry Otter is one of them. According to Urban Dictionary, Harry Otter is the hero of the Harry Potter novels adapted for otters. Featured in such thrilling adventures as Harry Otter and the Fish Head of Fire and Harry Otter and the Prisoner of Azkaban.
Sounds like a hit.
And he's totally beloved by 20 otters. Anyway, Natalie had, she was Harry Otter, and it looks like an actual mascot head, like you'd wear at a football game, like for the mascot.
Yeah.
And it's an otter, and I don't know how she made it, but it looks amazing.
Yeah, I saw it on the, I think it was the Millennial Facebook group, and it looked awesome, because I have a bad Patreon, and I just filled out the form to join the Facebook group, so.
Oh, good. Well, I'll be sure to add you.
It's okay.
But yeah, it has a little scar and everything, so it's just exciting to see, as always, still to this day, people really dressing up as Harry Potter stuff, characters.
That's so true. It
makes me feel not so alone.
And it reminds me not so alone. And I think of that every time I go to the Wizarding World theme parks, because people tend to dress up at those, and I'm like, oh, they still love it so much. And even at the party I was at last night, like, these people who are around my age, they are still so passionate about Harry Potter, and they're talking about how they're doing these rereads, and they're rereading the books right now using the illustrated editions. I'm like, that's solid. Awesome. Harry Potter really sticks with people, and I freaking
Did
love
you say
it.
They want to audit Hogwarts?
Yeah. Yeah, well, you know, they're adults. They're thinking like adults now.
Yeah.
They still love it. They just want to think critically.
What are the property taxes of that castle?
Right. Yeah.
I think it's an interesting discussion. Why are kids allowed to just waltz into the Forbidden Forest? Put a fence around that.
Dumbledore.
Because Dumbledore is a sick, twisted fool.
Wow. Yeah.
Is that your quote that's going to appear in Urban's book that's going to come out next month or next year?
Yeah.
I'm looking forward to seeing how many costumes I can count on Tuesday in New York City. There were plenty over the weekend, and it's always interesting to be sitting at a bar, and then there are people that are dressed up in costumes sitting next to you, and you feel like the odd person out. But that's pretty much what happened yesterday.
You know, Micah, funnily enough, you think you went to a bar with Kevin yesterday. That was actually me dressed up as Kevin.
Yep. You know what? I was going to say something, but I thought better of it. I had a sneaking suspicion that it was actually you.
Let's move on to some news. Big announcement for the Cursed Child this week. They are going to Australia in 2019. So that means the U.S. in 2018, Australia in 2019. Not necessarily a big surprise, but it's nice to see these official announcements coming out. It makes me wonder... will they just be opening a new show somewhere, like, on a yearly basis? I'm sure Australia was a priority because it is a huge country with a huge Harry Potter fan base, but it's kind of cool to think that by 2019, there'll be three of these productions running simultaneously.
That is sort of cool. Yeah. I think that is the goal, to open up in as many, certainly, continents as they can. Because remember, J.K. Rowling from day one has always said, you will be able to watch this play, you know?
Right.
And everybody behind it says, yes, you will be able to. And we thought that meant they were going to make it easy on themselves and everybody else and cheap and just film a performance. But no, what it means is there will actually be, at one point, a Cursed Child official production in your hometown. But it's nice they choose Australia, because, you know, Melbourne and all the people who live in it, who have listened to us throughout the years, are always talking about how nothing comes to Australia for Harry Potter. And I was really, really thrilled to see that would, you know, That's the third location for Cursed Child.
Yeah, it's really exciting for Australia. I actually saw the Cursed Child this past summer.
Oh, what do you think?
I just thought the story was okay when I read it, but the play was amazing.
Good. Glad you think so.
I think the production was just, it was insane.
Yeah.
The magic looks so real.
No.
Yeah, exactly.
Will the cast travel down? I guess they can't, right?
No.
It'll have to be a completely different cast.
Yeah, I don't think they'll have... So the big deal with the U.S. one is that the original cast came over from the U.K., but I doubt they're going to do that again. That just seems... That seems like
that'd
be a lot.
You'd be surprised. Maybe the cast really likes playing, performing it.
Yeah, maybe one or two will go down there.
Yeah.
What I found interesting was in the announcement video, J.K. Rowling said that she's never been to Australia before.
That's weird.
That's crazy.
Australia is great.
Eric's been Australian. Yeah. He's not one of the richest people in the world.
No. I mean, I'm sure it's not a matter of money.
Yeah. J.K. Rowling's like, it's too expensive.
Have they had premieres down there for the movies? I feel like they have.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just she hasn't gone to them.
Huh.
But it would make sense for her to go down there for the Australian premiere, and that'll be a good reason for her to get down there.
Yeah. So 2019.
Oh, I think Eric's thinking the wheels are turning.
Just let us know before you buy tickets.
Okay, fair.
Let's make predictions. What city or country will it go to next? Continent, even.
Where's an island?
An island?
No, Australia's an island.
Island.
I was going to do something really obscure, but I guess not.
I think maybe like Japan?
Yeah, somewhere in Asia.
Yeah, Asia.
Yeah, or Rio.
I'm also just thinking about, like, Hamilton. Big success, obviously. They are in L.A. right now. I feel like L.A. could come sooner rather than later. It might not be next, but I think they could put that in the West Coast, on the West Coast, and it would be just as successful as it will be on Broadway.
I was going to say Toronto or...
Yeah, it might eventually
it's a big place,
come to Canada.
Yeah.
It would probably be Toronto if it was going to be
Prince
anywhere.
Edward Island, I think, Kate. That should be where they go.
Yes, yes, 100%. I agree.
Some other news is kind of news. So on Friday, J.K. Rowling was tweeting up a storm, and she said that Fantastic Beasts 2 is not going to be called Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them 2. Okay? Now, she said the real title is coming soon. We did ask our patrons, what do you think the title is going to be? And one of you guys want to read some of those ideas? We do know, I think, that there was an interview last year, and Eddie Redmayne said the future movies are going to take on the Fantastic Beasts and the format, sort of like Harry Potter and the...
Oh... He said that?
Yeah, because he had asked David Yates and David Heyman, I think. So, which makes sense, because if you think about Harry Potter, like even the play, even the rides, everything's called Harry Potter and the. So,
yeah.
And you think about other WB films, The Hobbit and The Desolation of Smaug, Battle of the Five Armies.
Well, that I thought had a like a colon, like Hobbit series or Hobbit saga.
It's the same kind of idea, though.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. I actually, you know, to be honest, I cannot find this thread.
Maybe you dreamt it.
No, you know how Facebook does not sort things in a group by like chronology.
There's a search on the left. Use that.
Oh, on the left.
Here's my prediction: Fantastic Beasts and the. Battle
Ashley Barnes
for the Deathly Hallows.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. There's a lot of people joking, like, oh, it'll be called Fantastic Beasts in the Chamber of Secrets. You know.
What if?
Things like that. All right. Here's a post by Ashley. She got this started. Let's come up with names for Fantastic Beasts 2. 50 points to the house of the most liked name. Hashtag your house. Jeez. So we're playing games in our patron. We had Sarah write in Fantastic Beasts, : Fast and Furious. Hashtag Gryffindor. Beauty and the Fantastic Beasts from Jamie. Ashley said what is on everybody's mind, given the latest plot revelations. Fantastic Beasts and, oops, we forgot to put beasts in this one.
That's going to become too real.
Yeah, yeah. Sarah Cinto, Super Fantastic Beasts. Megan Poehler, Fantastic Beasts 2, an incomparable sequel. And Nita wrote in and said, Fantastic Grindelwald, and he's in Paris. Super funny. Nicole, Fantastic Beasts and Where to Hide Them. Nita again wrote in, dude, where's my demiguys? Question mark. Which I love.
I can't even seriously predict a title because I just think we really don't know much about this next movie. So
yeah, I feel like it'll fall in line with the titles of the Harry Potter books, where the is tied to a very specific key person or moment or thing in that particular movie.
Yeah.
So
A couple more here. Vinere wrote in, Fantastic Beasts and the Finally Fixed Briefcase. And Carrie wrote in, Fantastic Beasts and What the Heck is Up with Credence?
Fantastic Beasts and Credence's Revenge.
Ooh. Dun, dun,
dun. And Grindelwald's Revenge, I guess.
Yeah, yeah, I mean, they can't necessarily abandon Fantastic Beasts title altogether.
No.
If they do, it certainly, I don't think you could justify calling it the Fantastic Beasts series in the way that they already have. So,
Fantastic Beasts and the Runaway Obscurus.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe having Obscurus would be too obscure. People would be like, wait, what was that again?
I'm just trying to think of what we know so far about the movie. Could we possibly come close to guessing the title?
Well, there was a synopsis. Let me try to pull it up. It did mention Grindelwald.
Right. I hope his name isn't in the title.
Why not? What about...
You don't really... How many movies have the villain in the title?
Here we go. Really? Ready? As he promised he would, Grindelwald has made a dramatic escape and has been gathering more followers to his cause, which, like, is kind of a big spoiler alone, but okay. Elevating wizards above all non-magical beings. The only one who might be able to stop him is the wizard he once called his dearest friend, Albus Dumbledore. But Dumbledore will need help from the wizard who had thwarted Grindelwald once before, his former student, Newt Scamander. The adventure reunites Newt with Tina, Queenie, and Jacob, but his mission will also test their loyalties as they face new perils in an increasingly dangerous and divided wizarding world. Woo! I'm excited based off of that synopsis alone.
That's a pretty good synopsis as synopses go.
Maybe it's Fantastic Beasts and the Rise of Grindelwald.
Oh my god.
Yeah.
I would freak. I would scream.
people were hassling Joe on Twitter saying, prequel sequel. They could call it the prequel sequel. Mm-hmm.
So J.K. Rowling said it's coming soon. I have a slight crackpot theory here. So Justice League, WB's Justice League, you know, Batman and Superman and all them, comes out in November, basically exactly a year before Fantastic Beasts 2. I'm wondering if some sort of teaser trailer will be attached to Justice League, since they're both WB movies, and maybe that's where the title will be revealed, or they'll reveal the title just at the same time they say, hey, trailer's coming out, and this is the name of the movie. So I'm going to say that within the next month, we're going to have the title of the movie and maybe even a teaser trailer, because we also know they've been filming.
Oh, yeah. For months.
So there's tons of footage. It's not unheard of to have a trailer a year before a movie, right?
I think this is a really solid plan. A really solid idea. Hypothesis.
Not so crackpot after all.
We need stuff to talk
not
about.
Very
so.
Crackpot.
Please release the trailer.
Please, Joe. Give us a title. Oh, we're gonna have fun talking about the title, hopefully. Yeah.
And I hope it's actually not anything that's been proposed so far. I hope it's something very obscure that we have to really theorize about.
Like the Obscurial? Right.
Yeah, or like when the book titles used to come out.
And, exactly. That's what I was just going to say.
Who is the Half-Blood Prince? What are the Deathly Hallows?
Right. Right. Oh, man. Oh, yeah. And the cover.
Yeah.
Sorry, I'm making all these weird noises. But
and
I'm just...
the Circus Arcanus.
Oh, yeah. Maybe it'll involve the Circus.
Fantastic Beasts at the Circus Arcanus. Something like that.
Fantastic Beasts and Flamel's Rise. All right. So before we get into Halloween, I just wanted to quickly plug something we did on Patreon recently. One of our bonus MuggleCast installments was on the prank, the classic prank.
Eric really led the charge here, so I'll let him talk about it. But we had actually planned this for our main show originally, tied to the Prisoner of Azkaban Illustrated Edition. And then some other news broke. I forget exactly what it was. Do you remember, Eric?
No, but no, I don't.
That news then then ended up taking the main bulk of our discussion, and we moved this to a bonus MuggleCast. Eric did the heavy lifting, so I'll let him talk about it.
Well, it's just a character analysis of Sirius Black based on the prank that he played on Snape when they were all children, involving Lupin and we just had a really, really good discussion. Basically, I had highlighted some passages from the book to help build the case, build the argument, see how we all feel about him, and we talked about it. It was really, really, really old school, actually, to be discussing with, you know, heavy quotation from the book series, kind of to get in deep to Harry Potter. So
yeah. And we got a lot of good feedback. So the reason I wanted to mention it now is that if you've been on the fence about Patreon, we've been doing some really good stuff over there. So check it out over at patreon.com/MuggleCast. That particular bonus MuggleCast is available at the Dumbledore's Army level, as are all bonus MuggleCasts, by the way.
And I quickly looked it up. We got the casting news for Fantastic Beasts. So that's what ended up.
Oh, yeah. The huge, huge casting news. Well, happy accident. But yeah, the prank is it is a really, really good. It's certainly the bonus MuggleCast I'm proudest of that we've done in recent months.
Yeah.
So
it brought me back too to our days of theorizing and discussing, and it was nice to do. And I think we're definitely going to do more of those.
Yeah, I was just going to say, personally, I've been rereading, and they've been inspiring me to like come up with more discussions about particular elements, because I'm reading and I'm thinking, and I'm like, well, we should maybe just talk about this on MuggleCast.
Where are you at currently?
Oh, just in book 3.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I bought the Harry Potter complete series on Kindle because I wanted the portability, but it's like, I kind of hate it because it's one giant book. It's not 7 separate books.
Oh.
Yeah. And you can't even, like, it doesn't do that Kindle thing where it tells you how much time you have left before you complete the chapter. And I don't know, it's just harder to search, and I don't like it.
So it doesn't do what normal Kindle things
right.
do?
Right, and I don't understand why it doesn't.
But that actually doesn't make any sense.
I do not recommend that. If anybody wants to get the digital versions, just buy the individuals. I can't return it, I don't think, but I kind of just want to buy the individual ones anyway. Because I hate this version.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Well, how much was it, the whole thing?
It's like 55? Our Halloween discussion is coming up here on MuggleCast, but first it's time to tell you about Blue Apron. They are celebrating their 5th anniversary by bringing back the top 20 recipes from throughout the past 5 years as picked by you, the Blue Apron community. Your favorite Blue Apron recipes are back on the menu for a limited time only. I love using Blue Apron. What you do is you get to pick the meals that they send to you on a weekly basis. These are really good meals using fresh ingredients, and you cook them yourself. They give you a very easy guide. Someone like me who has never really cooked before can do it, so I'm sure you can do it too. They're also great for people who are experienced with cooking because you get to try new meals that you may have never cooked before. And you don't have to worry about assembling the right ingredients. They send you everything you need and the exact portions, so you're not wasting any food either, which is important for the world. It feels so good to cook and then taste a meal that you created on your own. It's really rewarding, and I love just getting away from technology for a little bit, listening to some music, listening to a podcast, and cooking, getting my hands doing something other than typing and tapping. You're going to love using Blue Apron. Check out this week's menu and get $30 off your first meal with free shipping by going to blueapron.com/mugglecast. You're going to love how good it feels and tastes to create incredible home-cooked meals with Blue Apron. So don't wait. That's blueapron.com/mugglecast. Blue Apron is a better way to cook. And happy 5th anniversary to Blue Apron. All right. Well, let's move into our main discussion. Halloween at Hogwarts.
Nice. You have to talk like that the whole time.
Okay, I will.
Take it away.
Take it away, Micah.
You want me to do it?
Yes, we discussed this before the show.
So I think it would be appropriate for us to talk about Halloween in the Harry Potter series, given that it's just a few days away. And worth noting that we have done this before. I'll mention the previous episodes we've had these discussions. So if you don't like what we're saying now, you can go back and listen to what we said a bunch of years ago. But I think hopefully at least these discussions will be a little bit more informed, just given all the information that we have. So we're going to talk first about key events that have happened on Halloween in the Harry Potter series. And we did that back on episode 161, if you want to give that a listen. And then we'll talk a little bit about the ghosts that make an appearance in the series. And we did that all the way back on episode 61. So there's a good chance that there's a lot more information available about some of these ghosts and the role that they play, especially I'm thinking of the Grey Lady and the Bloody Baron, given that that episode was pre-Deathly Hallows.
Unbelievable.
So we'll start with the key events that have happened on Halloween in the series, and I think probably none is more notable than Halloween 1981, and that is the night that Voldemort kills Lily and James Potter, and Harry, I'll put quotations around, defeats Voldemort for the first time. So it's a central date. It's a central holiday to the series, not just for this moment, but for those that follow.
I wonder how J.K. Rowling decided for that to occur on Halloween. Does she have a thing for Halloween? Does it?
Yeah, it might be. I mean, considering what happened to Voldemort and his soul, that it joined sort of an ethereal plane, it seems like it makes the most sense to do that on the Day of the Dead, like on the day that spirits are said to be closer to this world. That said, it never becomes like a plot point of the books that Voldemort was aided, he was able to still survive, or, you know, it actually had nothing to do with the fact that it was Halloween in the end. That didn't provide any additional magic, either force, protection for Harry, or anything that we know of.
Yeah.
So it is just a coincidence, but yeah, I don't know. It's kind of spooky, yeah. I guess.
Yeah. I guess it does make it spooky, but it's not just a coincidence, I wouldn't say.
What do you think, Kate?
I think it just kind of makes it a little extra spooky. It would have been really cool, though, if it was an actual plot point that he chose Halloween for a certain reason, like Voldemort chose Halloween.
And it's worth noting that this event is revisited in Cursed Child, and come to think of it, really, it did feel spooky revisiting it, knowing that it occurs on Halloween.
Yeah, it did. Yeah. Plus, it was terrifying when Voldemort appears in Cursed Child.
Yeah, yeah.
And even tying it into the title of the seventh book, I know there was a lot of speculation when we got Deathly Hallows and how that, if in any way, ties into the holiday of Halloween or All Hallows Eve. I'm sure we discussed that at some point back in the day.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, there's also in Sorcerer's Stone, the troll breaking into the dungeons. And this is really, I know I said the previous Halloween was the most important, but I would say this one is probably up there because it's formative. It is really when the trio of Harry, Ron, and Hermione come together and their friendship is formed.
Yeah. There are certain things you can't do without becoming friends and liking each other a whole lot, and tackling a fully grown mountain troll is one of them.
This is true.
I'm paraphrasing, but yeah.
Yeah. One of my favorite scenes in the movies, probably, when Quirrell runs in and announces that there's a troll. But this is another reason Hogwarts needs to be audited. Why is stuff like this happening? I'm glad it happened.
Yep.
Glad it happened because the trio formed a friendship, but shouldn't have happened. They could have become friends over a good dinner conversation or something instead. Over butterbeer.
Well, that's the convention of things happening on Halloween is also special, I think, because at this point in the book, people have settled into the school year, right? Like, Harry's classes have become more regular or common. You start seeing J.K. Rowling's writing starts to wander over to, like, what's happening with Quidditch tryouts and practice. And, you know, ultimately, October 30th, like the end of October, they've been in school 2 months, and it's the right passage of time for something interesting to, like, happen again, you know?
Yeah.
Well, and then especially as you move on in the books, you have this expectation that something is going to happen on Halloween that's important. So I think it goes back to Andrew's point of really what was J.K. Rowling thinking early on when she was writing that this holiday was always going to be in some way integral to the plot.
And I don't think, I mean, Harry himself never, so far as I can recall, reminisces or ruminates on the fact that his parents died on that night. Mm-hmm. Like, the anniversary, nobody really celebrates the anniversary of the fall of Voldemort in front of Harry. You know, it's not like, what was it in Cursed Child? Voldy Day or Voldemort Day?
Yeah, Voldemort Day.
Or something, Cursed Child. That gem of a play, Cursed Child. You know, nobody calls Halloween Voldemort Day. Maybe because it's already Halloween, or maybe they're just being polite. But, you know, the way the first chapter of the first book ends with people raising a glass, and actually, McGonagall has that line that says, I wouldn't be surprised if today was known as Harry Potter Day in the future. Mm. Although I think she's talking about November 1st. We don't actually know. If that actually happens or doesn't happen, or who celebrates that anniversary. But Harry, when he's got all this other stuff going on Halloween, never really thinks about it.
Yeah.
And I think it's not until he visits his parents' grave in Deathly Hallows that it's even mentioned again that it was Halloween.
It's sort of like, it's just one of those things that J.K. Rowling likes to revisit with every book, like the number 12, the number 7, mm-hmm. Halloween. These are certain things she likes to work in maybe small ways. Like the 12 thing, that was always something that was like subtle.
Yeah, I think it's chapter 12 of every book where the villain is revealed.
What?
Secretly.
Really?
Yeah, it's a real thing. It's for the first few books, actually. Not chapter 12, but it's it might be 7, chapter 7, because in book 1, it's the break-in at Gringotts, and Harry meets Quirrell in the, not Three Broomsticks, damn. Leaky Cauldron. Yeah, it's like chapter 7 of every book. Mad-Eye Moody's entrance, I think, is there, in Goblet of Fire. Anyway, it's a real thing.
All right.
Yeah, I was just looking at an old MuggleNet page for, like, they got the list of references to number 12, the references to number 7. Obviously, there's a lot more references to number 7.
We should credit most of that comes from the work of Wizarding World Press and their book, The Ultimate Unofficial Guide to the Mysteries of Harry Potter, which is on Amazon.
Oh.
But, yeah, most of the work was done by them at first, like, pointing that stuff out. It's really, really clever, intense literary analysis.
So just moving on to Chamber of Secrets. Halloween marks the death day party for nearly headless Nick. So whenever he passed, he died on Halloween. So that's, or he was beheaded on Halloween.
You know, I often forget that. That's really unlucky.
But more importantly, the Chamber of Secrets is opened for the first time in 50 years, and Mrs. Norris gets petrified. So we have another key moment relating back to the title that occurs on Halloween.
Yeah. This is, Halloween is not a good day for Filch.
No.
Not at all.
And you know he hates Halloween, or any celebration to begin with. So to have to celebrate a terrible holiday, in his opinion, and lose his cat, basically, awful.
Yeah, and Eric, I know you've always enjoyed the Death Day party. It was cut from the films? Is there a deleted scene? Am I making that up in my mind?
No, I don't think they ever filmed it.
I don't think so.
I think it was cut early enough that they didn't film
it. Wasn't there
it.
A book scene that was cut?
Or
what am I thinking of?
From the first one, they cut the Midnight Duel. That's not a thing.
Maybe I'm just confusing it with like the ghost stuff, because we know there was like a lot of ghost stuff, I think, that J.K. Rowling wanted to do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was also an introduction to other types of people who are in the series. We get our first introduction to a vampire at the Death Day party.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it was clearly a good moment for nearly headless Nick, because he was very happy that Harry and crew decided to show up and pay homage to him.
Yeah. That was really nice. And like nearly headless Nick, like I know we're going to mention the what house would you want to be in based on its ghost, but honestly, nearly headless Nick is real solid for a ghost. He's real solid.
Yep. And then Prisoner of Azkaban, Sirius Black breaks in to Hogwarts and he attacks the portrait of the Fat Lady on Halloween.
What did the Fat Lady ever do to him? And now I'm wondering, like, legit, what did the Fat Lady
do? Maybe he really just hates her.
A beef back in the day, you know, when he was at school. So, I mean, that one's not as exciting. I mean, it obviously doesn't carry the same weight as the previous two. But the next one, the Goblet of Fire, selecting the Triwizard Champions on Halloween, has huge implications for really the rest of the series.
Yeah, I mean, it essentially condemns Cedric to death and Harry to a year of trouble.
And the return
and
of Voldemort.
Excitement. And yeah, the return of Voldemort. Well, that's not the good. We can't put that on the goblet. it in choosing the champions, it essentially all it's destiny, and the fact that there aren't supposed to be four champions, but there are. It's a big deal. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So
going back to Prisoner of Azkaban, though, I just remember reading it. Andrew, are you there yet in your Prisoner of Azkaban reread?
Yes, I think I just passed this, actually. You're talking about the break into Hogwarts?
The break into Hogwarts, because it's actually, I remember being very scary.
Yeah, it is, because all the students, I think, they go to the Great Hall, and then the teachers spread out looking for Sirius. And it's a big surprise, because we were led to believe that the Dementors were keeping the school safe, and yet somehow Sirius got in.
Yeah, that's a good. And we're you know, when we're still thinking that he's a bad guy,
right.
We don't want him anywhere near Harry.
Right. And then like attacking the Fat Lady portrait, you just kind of have this vision of like this vicious attack where he's slashing it.
Yeah. Is that also where Ron wakes up and sees Sirius over him, or is that later?
I think that's later.
Yeah.
Okay. So he gets in twice. Yeah, it's just unbelievable.
Yeah.
And wasn't it Neville? No, it's not Neville's fault. That's also the later, where he leaves the list of passwords or whatever.
Oh, yeah.
But actually, we know that Crookshanks stole it from him, so it's not really Neville's fault.
So that's really it as far as the key events in the series, because in the subsequent books, Order of the Phoenix, Half-Blood Prince, and Deathly Hallows, we don't get a direct call-out or reference to Halloween this seems to be the last time that a major event happens on Halloween.
Yeah.
Which is interesting. I wonder why after Goblet of Fire, the decision was made not to call attention to it.
Yeah, it is interesting because it kind of became a tradition. Going back to even before the books themselves started because of Voldemort killing Harry's parents in the very beginning. So to not even include it in any of the final three, like Deathly Hallows I could see because it was so different. It wasn't a typical year. But like Order of the Phoenix and Half-Blood Prince, like those were standard years at Hogwarts in terms of telling a story. And I think just overall, it can be said that October 31st is a very unlucky day at Hogwarts, and you should probably just stay inside, stay in your dorm that day. Don't go out.
Yeah.
Well, isn't there a Halloween feast every year, too? Are those mentioned in Order of the Phoenix and Half-Blood Prince?
I wonder.
I don't know. I wouldn't go to that, though. Unlucky. Let's go on
something. Please. You're watching your glutens.
Yeah, the feast definitely is something. I mean, I would go. It looks cool.
Oh, absolutely.
No, you don't like it, Andrew?
No. I didn't say that.
No.
I mean, it's cool, but I've just decided that this day's unlucky, so I wouldn't go out. Playing on my Nintendo Switch in my dorm.
Okay.
All right.
That's fair.
So
good luck getting that electronic to work at Hogwarts.
Fine, I'll leave the Wizarding World. Even better. Get out of that unlucky place.
Self-imposed exile. Mm-hmm. New Mario game, everybody. Bye. Peace.
All right. Unless anybody has anything else on Halloween itself, figured we could talk a little bit about the ghosts that are featured in the Harry Potter series.
Yep.
And actually, Pottermore just did this reanimation, which is pretty cool for all of the ghosts. So if you scroll through Nearly Headless Nick and the Great Lady and the Fat Friar and the Bloody Baron, and I think there's a couple of others here as well. They just kind of brought portraits of them to life. Peeves is there, even though I don't think he classifies as a ghost. But pretty cool. I'm sure they're probably going to do some stuff for Halloween as well.
Yeah, maybe. The ghosts were always a fun element of the books. We didn't get enough of them, though. They were also animated in their own ways. I mean, we got plenty of the Grey Lady by the seventh book, but like the Bloody Baron, Nearly Headless Nick. And I know one of the... I think one thing people always kind of had an issue with in regards to the movies is that we didn't get enough of them there. Like in the first one, maybe two we did. But then after that, they really fell by the wayside.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, the decision to nix Peeves and Peeves being a poltergeist slightly separate from that ghost, but still, like, the Bloody Baron keeping Peeves in line is not at all in the movies because there's no Peeves.
Who's your favorite ghost, Kate?
I really like the Fat Friar as a Hufflepuff, but I love the Grey Lady's story that we learned in Deathly Hallows.
Yeah. And my God, were those scenes good in the movie?
Yeah, they were.
I thought.
Yeah, and speaking of Peeves, he was actually cast for Sorcerer's Stone, but they never included him.
Well, and they talk, there is actually footage of that. There's not footage of the Death Day party, but somewhere there is footage of Chris Rankin. He tells this story. As Percy, where the students, as they're walking up to the dormitory right before you meet the fat lady, they encounter Peeves. And it's something, he said it's one of the most fun days on set, was when that actor, whose name escapes me,
Rick, I'll find Mayall it in a moment.
Mayall?
Something
Something. Very, very famous British comedian. They got to play the role, did a real good job, but it wasn't jibing for the tone of the film, I think, is what they said in the end.
Yeah. So in addition to these reanimated pictures that Pottermore has up, there's plenty of information on all the Hogwarts ghosts and then a few of the others who appear in the series. And I thought we could first start with Nearly Headless Nick. And It says that he is a 15th century nobleman who went to Hogwarts. He was a wizard at the royal court of Henry VII. He fell in love with Lady Greve, and after trying to magically fix her crooked teeth, the spell backfired. She ended up growing tusks as opposed to teeth.
And oh, no.
As a result, Nick was sentenced to death. And clearly, the procedure did not go all that well, since he is nearly headless.
Man. I feel really bad for him. Like, this is why it's important to study your charms, folks.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Study up. Flitwick's class.
But I feel like he's a fan favorite, especially in the movies.
Yeah, he was fun playing around with his head basically falling off.
I mean, John Cleese is a treasure. But the character of Nearly Headless Nick also just really likes Harry. He's the ghost with the most personality, besides Moaning Myrtle, who we have in the Harry Potter books. He is seen asking Harry for advice on, you know, the death day party. He reaches out an invitation directly, and it really comes from a place of low self-esteem that Nick reaches out to, you know, and low self-confidence that he reaches out to Harry to begin with, because he's not feeling, he feels like if Harry comes, then it will somehow validate Nick to some of the other bullies, ghosts who are there at the death day party.
Yep.
Sir Podmore.
I think it's really interesting that he's a wizard at royal court too. Like, I wonder if they knew he was a wizard, or if
probably not, because of the
secrecy.
Yeah.
I certainly hope that woman didn't live the rest of her life with tusks.
Yeah, that's kind of horrible.
Yeah, well, I mean, somebody somewhere would have had to. I'm sure they would have like put out a call across the land, and somebody would be able to fix it.
I'm sure. Yeah, but.
Yeah, that's why everybody's so cool with Hogwarts and all that weird stuff that they're up to, because you can fix most things.
Yeah.
Eric, why don't you take your house ghost?
My house ghost, the Fat Friar?
Yeah.
Okay. He is a jolly fellow who resembles a monk. And his backstory is that his magical ways rouse suspicion. He was executed after senior churchmen grew suspicious of his ability to cure the pox and his penchant for pulling rabbits out of the communion cup. So I have a feeling that this guy, who was a monk, or was a friar at the very least, I don't know if it's sacrilege if he was, unless there's an article on Pottermore, I'm not seeing this brief summary, seems to suggest that he was at first using his powers for good, but the more pious among them sort of thought that he was, I don't know, they couldn't cure the boils or the pox, so why should he?
So it was a jealousy sort of thing, you think?
And, yeah.
A jealousy thing probably didn't work too well in the church. And then also to entertain himself, seemed like he had to like to have a good, you know, fun time. And he liked rabbits, so he pulled them out of the cup.
And yeah, I thought it was comical that they mentioned that he always resented the fact that he did not become a cardinal.
See, that's it just there, is like, you have somebody who's a good guy, who's truly loves a good time, he is pious, he's devout, it seems, and he's held back from reaching a higher station within the church because the church is a, you know, regimented, very, you know, straight, very, you know, no funny business, right, sort of thing. So that you have this guy who really wanted to succeed in serving the Lord is prevented from doing so by rigid and unforgiving peers and system.
Yeah.
So the system
he,
got
like
him
like I said
down.
Earlier, he is very much liked by those of us who follow MuggleCast on Twitter, because he was the top pick by far. People would join Hufflepuff just based on him alone.
Is it because he's a jolly fellow? People want to hang out with a jolly fellow?
Yeah, he just sounds like a good guy.
Yeah. I mean, Nearly Headless Nick is sort of seen moping very often, but the Fat Friar seems like he'd always be a good fun dude to drink with, right?
Well,
like,
these are kids.
We don't
remember.
See a lot of him. Oh yeah, they're children. Well,
they're not
I don't
a
know.
Drinking age.
He's Butterbeer at 14 is alcoholic. Oh.
The Fat Friar is the Hedwig, or sorry, the Hagrid of the ghosts, I think.
Yeah,
jolly man you want to hang out with. Gets too drunk sometimes.
Especially
starts crying.
Hagrid. All right. Well, the next two house ghosts I think we can take together because their stories are intertwined. The Gray Lady. So back on episode 61, I don't think there was any chance that we would have guessed at the significance of the Gray Lady. And not only that, there was a question in the show notes about the Bloody Baron asking the question, why is the Baron so bloody? And we, of course, come to know the answer to that question. So the Gray Lady, Helena Ravenclaw, the daughter of Hogwarts founder Rowena Ravenclaw, she does help Harry locate the lost diadem of her mother in Deathly Hallows, but she initially stole it. And from her mother, she ran away to an Albanian forest that comes into play later on, only to be tracked down by the Bloody Baron, who was not bloody yet. She refused to return home with him. So, you know, her mother sent the Baron in search of Helena, and she refused to go back. And as a result, the Baron, mad with love, stabbed her to death. After he fatally stabs her, he was so remorseful that he ended up using the exact same weapon to take his own life. So this is a very tragic story.
It's very sad.
You know, it's called a tragic story. Pottermore on October 27th tweeted this, and Katie highly pointed this out. At its heart, the Bloody Baron's story is a tragic tale of love and loss. That's what the tweet from Pottermore says. I actually disagree. And we pointed out in an internal MuggleNet group that actually, it's a tale of toxic masculinity, taken to its extreme. There's no love in the Bloody Baron's story. Maybe he thinks there is, but it's all about lust, right? It's all about coveting. It's all about wanting to possess another. This woman doesn't, like, want to be with him, so he kills her? Excuse me? That's not, like, tragically love. Like, that's not romantic at all.
I agree.
That's a very fair
point. A bit problematic for Pottermore to be romanticizing it. We shouldn't be so quick to romanticize, and we weren't. But I'm saying in general, you know, the Gray Lady and the Bloody Baron's story, it's bloody. He's got blood on his hands, literally. And I think that is sort of fitting that, you know, Rowling for years in interviews said, you know, oh, it's a dark story. You'll find out eventually. But he's essentially, you know, punished. There's blood on his visage for all eternity now. The interesting thing is I really wonder how the Gray Lady feels knowing that this man who killed her is now also at Hogwarts. Like, she could have perhaps requested that he not be allowed there.
Yeah. I was wondering that, too. Like, I wouldn't want the... the guy that killed me to be there either.
Yeah. Oh, hey, how you doing? Oh, nothing.
Yeah,
I'm fine.
Just in the break room by the water cooler. You know,
do ghosts need a break from anything? They're on permanent break. Well, and like related to all this, like, are ghosts happy being around forever? Like, it just seems like a sad life. Like, this is why the Philosopher's Stone is so controversial, because it's like, who wants to live forever? To quote Queen.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe by definition they're not happy, because if they led a full life and didn't choose to come back, they wouldn't have chosen to come back. Mm. It seems to be a clear choice that they made. Although for some, like Moaning Myrtle or Professor Binns, it seems to be a little less clear cut. With Myrtle chose to come back to haunt Olive Hornby, but Binns presumably didn't, like, make a conscious choice to not crossover that we know of.
Yeah, and you would think that Bin's, like, even though his classes are really boring, according to the students, at least he's doing something with his quote-unquote life. Like, these other ghosts, yeah. What are they doing?
Right. It's sort of morbid. They just have to kind of... It's not like they're reliving what happened, but, I mean, ghosts are echoes of their past selves or whatever, and it just seems like they wander. Like, the Fat Friar, I'm sure, is getting up to some good fun revelry with the Hufflepuffs. I do want the... Is the Fat Friar in Puffs the play, Micah?
That's a good question. I don't remember off the top of my head. There is a chance he is.
It seems like an oversight if he's not, but...
somebody listening I won't definitely judge it knows the answer to that question. I feel like he was.
Yeah, yeah. Okay.
Yeah, and really the only thing left to mention about the four main house ghosts is that Bloody Baron has chains on him, basically an act of penitence for what he did to Helena Ravenclaw. So... and I think we do see the Bloody Baron. Do we see pretty much all four house ghosts in the first movie? Am I making that up?
Yeah.
Very briefly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They recast the Grey Lady. Definitely. But, like, obviously. But yeah, I think they're all there because they fly in. I mean, yeah, Nick is the only one we get dialogue from, but the other ones are all there. And actually, there's a number of other ghosts that aren't house ghosts that are... you know, around Hogwarts, and I think maybe some of them are mentioned on Pottermore, but those are the main ones.
Well, if you want more on these two, though, just go and read Deathly Hallows.
lots more to be found.
Yeah, there's... Well, actually, both of these ghosts were mentioned already, Professor Binns and Moaning Myrtle. Not tied specifically to any one house, but definitely integral in their own ways to the plots of, well, both of them for Chamber of Secrets, I would say. We joke that Professor Binns doesn't play much of a role at all, because he teaches this boring subject of history of magic. But in fact, he is the one who...
Maybe boring to you.
Well, okay.
I always thought it would be a cool one of those classes where it could be really cool, but the professor just makes it boring.
There you go. Yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah, I mean, that's so true about most courses in the real world too. It's like they could be boring or they could be really interesting depending on the teacher.
Yeah, that's definitely fair.
But McGonagall totally steals his thunder.
Yes.
In the movie.
Yeah, she is the one who kind of tells the. The legend of the Chamber of Secrets, but it gives Binns some level of importance, you know, outside of just assigning essays on goblin revolutions. This was his moment. It ties into Moaning Myrtle, obviously.
Yeah, and
he could have crossed over that next day, you know, to be like, well, I've done my job. I've succeeded at exciting students. I'm done.
Isn't it said in the books? That in that scene that he became interested in telling them the story because they all actually perked up.
Yes.
Do I have that right?
Well, I think what happens is Harry notices that everybody perks up, so it would be unusual for Binns to say no. But I think he's just flabbergasted that so many people are pressuring him direct. I'm sure most people, because he is the sort of like the lecture style of teaching.
Yeah.
I'm sure he isn't used to even seeing one hand raised, let alone everybody.
Well, that should have been a learning lesson for him.
If
he cared. Like, okay, maybe my lesson should start being a little more relevant to, like, what's going on in the wizarding world right now.
Yeah. Like, well, I guess that's the joke, like, is that these goblin rebellions of 400 years ago are supposed to be super relevant to today. Mm-hmm. Like, if you'd actually paid attention in Binns's class... the idea is, right, that you could actually glean some insight into, I don't know, what modern day human goblin relations are all about.
Yeah.
But it's just such dense, like everything in history, like it's so hard to get through. Mm-hmm. You guys are totally right. Like, if Binns were a better teacher, he could probably make it interesting.
Yeah, but I've always thought that there are things underlying, to your point, Eric, what he's teaching and it may not be all directly applicable to Harry's story, but I think it would have been good on the part of Joe, not just with him talking about the Chamber of Secrets, but are there things that he's teaching his class early on in Sorcerer's Stone, Chamber of Secrets, Prisoner of Azkaban, that do end up playing a significant role? And they think back to the fact that, oh, Professor Binns mentioned this, you know, during one of our lessons. It's just that, to me, that seems like the type of class that this would be. It doesn't end up really being that way, but I'm saying Professor Binns was underutilized.
I actually would agree with you.
Binns for president.
Yeah. And Binns 2020.
Who else we got?
Moaning Myrtle, which I'm sure we've talked about a lot on this podcast over the years, but she's definitely a presence within Hogwarts, one to be reckoned with.
And in Cursed Child.
Yeah.
She's some of the comic relief, very, very animated. Did you like her role in Cursed Child, Kate?
I did, and the actress that played her when I saw it was amazing.
Yeah.
She was great.
I say that because she was very, like, animated, and she kind of flew out of the fountain, which was cool.
Yeah, and her voice just, it really sounded like, I don't remember the actress that played her in the movie, but it really sounded like her.
Yeah.
Remind me what her role is in Cursed Child.
Well, they realize they need to go see a ghost, right?
Yeah, they want to. Has something to do with the lake? They want to get into the lake.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, so they have to go talk to Moaning Myrtle.
Yeah,
It's certainly the central mystery of the Chamber of Secrets. Like as you were saying, Micah, like. You know, and it's the location of the chambers. It's how they eventually find out. Figuring out that Moaning Myrtle was the student who was murdered 50 years ago unlocks the second half of the book for Harry and Ron. And it's actually a really cool revelation. Like, it's right up there with figuring out that Sirius Black isn't bad. Finding out that Moaning Myrtle isn't just a wet blanket of a character. That her tears mean something, that, you know, she... Even in spite of herself, she is relevant to the plot in a very direct way. So it's classic Joe switcheroo, like hidden in plain sight sort of thing.
Yep. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, I figured we can wrap it up with Peeves, who is actually a poltergeist, not a ghost, but he definitely does his fair share. Or causes his fair share of trouble throughout the series. He is well-named. He has been a pet peeve of every Hogwarts caretaker, from Hankerton Humble, who was actually appointed by the four founders of the school. There have been several concerted efforts to remove Peeves from the castle. All of them have resulted in failure. The last and most disastrous was made in 1876, so it's been over 100 years since they tried to remove him when the Potter series takes place, by caretaker Rancorous Carp, who devised an elaborate trap baited with an assortment of weapons he believed would be irresistible to Peeves, and a vast enchanted bell jar reinforced by various containment charms, which he intended to drop over the poltergeist once he was in place. Not only did Peeves break easily through the giant bell jar, showering an entire corridor with broken glass, he also escaped the trap, armed with several cutlasses, crossbows, a blunderbuss, and a miniature cannon. The castle was evacuated while Peeves amused himself by firing randomly out of the windows and threatening all and sundry with death. This would have been cool to see, like, take shape at some point in the movies.
I can see it now. He's just like, oh, you give me weapons? All right, here we go.
There was a 3-day standoff, and it was ended when the headmistress, Eupraxia Mole, agreed to sign a contract allowing Peeves additional privileges, such as a once-weekly swim in the boys' toilets on the ground floor, first refusal on stale bread from the kitchen for throwing purposes, and a new hat. So Carp took early retirement for health reasons, and no subsequent attempt has ever been made to rid the castle of its most ill-disciplined inhabitant.
They made him a hat from Madame Bonaby? Bonaby in Paris? I don't know how you make a ghost hat.
That's interesting,
unless
yeah.
Unless you yourself are a ghost tailor. Very interesting.
Like you're
stuff
saying, how does
there
it like transfer into the ghost world?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a good question.
Maybe so there's some sort of charm you can put on it to be compatible with ghosts.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel like we've discussed, too, why wouldn't Dumbledore try and remove Peeves from Hogwarts? And I feel like, doesn't he say that he doesn't know if he could, even if he tried?
And maybe Dumbledore has a soft spot for Peeves. We know Dumbledore likes the lighter moments, likes to lighten the scene. And while Peeves is a bit of a jerk, he does lighten up the school. He does. And it gives the school character. So.
Yeah, I'm going to go so far as to say maybe Dumbledore is powerful enough wizard that he could remove Peeves.
Probably, yeah. Like, of course, I mean, of course.
If he wanted to, he can, but he does not want to.
He can fight Grindelwald and Voldemort, but not Peeves.
No. You know, what would be real cool is if the movies, if they have that same actor come back and be Peeves now at Hogwarts.
Yeah, why not
in the new series?
Yeah,
I would.
That would be awesome.
Yeah, I was actually thinking about that earlier, like this would be revisiting Hogwarts is a good chance to like see a ghost or two, maybe just in the, it'll probably just be in the background, but that would be awesome.
Well, I think we suggest, I was thinking about maybe seeing some, one of our listeners wrote in and said, will we see Professor Binns alive and well?
I think I tweeted that.
Nobody knows.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, you did. You blew my mind.
Yeah. It's possible. And then, just to wrap up on Peeves, he is afraid of the Bloody Baron, the one, I won't say person, but I think there's respect for Dumbledore and there's definite respect for Fred and George that we see in the series, but the only entity that he is afraid of is the Bloody Baron. So it's almost like the Bloody Baron is used by name anytime Peeves starts to wreak havoc.
I think they're probably different energies getting into that real quick, like why Peeves actually is so afraid of the Bloody Baron. Like you said, Micah, like Harry is, there's that scene, I think they're going up to give the dragon, right, to Charlie's friends when they encounter Peeves in this scene. It's not in the movie. But Harry says he imitates the voice of the Bloody Baron, basically, and says that you can't be up here tonight, Peeves. You know,
that was a good Bloody Baron.
Doing the voice made me cough. And he says, when Peeves is like, "But why are you invisible?" And he's like, "The Bloody Baron has his own reasons for being invisible." You know, real cool stuff. So, smart thinking on Harry, but because Peeves represents a sort of playful, childish nature, childish whim. Poltergeists are often the spirits of dead children, actually, or seem to be that childish energy. And the Baron is this grown man who murdered the one he was lusting after, and is forced to wear chains for eternity and be spattered with blood for eternity. Very different energies, you know, very different. Definitely a buzzkill. So I think that's what the Bloody Baron is to Peeves. Big buzzkill.
All right. Well, that wraps up our conversations on the ghosts of Hogwarts. But we did ask on Twitter.
I want to end with this question. Do we believe in ghosts? I don't.
I don't either.
You guys don't?
No.
What? I'll say yes.
All right. I got a podcast recommendation for you two then. You got to listen to
Potter Erotica
called
Ghost
And
Edition.
That's Why We Drink. it's called And That's Why We Drink. And it's half ghost, half paranormal, half true crime podcast. Two ladies, they're fantastic, M. Schultz and Christine Schaefer. It's only in its 40th episode. It's a brand new show. Y'all got to check it out. It will not disappoint. They tell ghost stories, like real, like stories of haunted places, and it might just change your mind on ghosts. But then also, it's true crime in the
so
back.
So you believe in ghosts. Okay. That's what you're saying.
Yeah, I do.
I believe in ghosts, yeah.
So we're a split what? Podcast.
All right, well, you two have fun living in yeah, fear okay. of ghosts.
We'll send some your way.
But definitely, no, there is life after, absolutely, in some
look
form,
behind you right now. Some. It's not Brooklyn.
Oh, my God. Actually, he isn't here. Where'd he go?
Brooklyn?
Oh, he's in bed. He left the couch.
He's on the ceiling. Scared. He's on the ceiling. He's walking
he's
on the ceiling.
I'm saying.
All right. But we did ask on Twitter the question, if you had to pick your Hogwarts house based on the house ghost alone. So Nearly Headless Nick, the Fat Friar, the Bloody Baron, or the Grey Lady, which house would you choose? So let's go around first, and then we can see what other people had to say.
I'm going to be contrary and say, just because, and unexpected, and I'm going to say the Grey Lady. I'm going to say Ravenclaw, because
yeah.
I think she actually helps the students with their logic problems sometimes.
Mm.
With their intellectual pursuits. I get the feeling that she's approachable.
I will have to go with the Fat Friar, which I wouldn't have said before today's discussion, but just reflecting on him being a jolly man, he'd be fun to drink with. But I'm actually also with Eric on the Grey Lady. Like, those scenes in Deathly Hallows still stick with me. And I have mad respect for her in light of helping Harry. So
yeah, Tom Riddle tricks her. Like, he's able to have enough conversation with her that he judges her psychologically and is able to actually trick her into revealing the location of the diadem, like where she put it. Unbelievable.
Yeah. Exactly.
Cade, what about you?
I'd also have to pick the Fat Friar, I think. I think he's just the most fun.
Not Binns? Binns is fun.
Yeah,
he's not a house ghost.
No, I'm making a joke here. Never mind.
I would agree. I think Fat Friar.
Okay, wow. Well, we're going to have Fat Friar on the podcast.
He's available. He doesn't have much to do with his time. Not these days, anyway.
Yeah.
But as mentioned, we did ask this question on Twitter and got a ton of responses. The first from Emily says, still Gryffindor. Sir Nicholas is a head above the rest. We need the little sound effect.
Drum beat. Ba-doom.
Hannah May says, if I pick the Bloody Baron, does that mean Peeves will refrain from annoying me, i.e. throwing ink pellets, dropping stone busts at the Baron's request?
Ooh, maybe.
I didn't know.
Yeah, if your house ghost was the Bloody Baron, you might be able to recruit him to stop Peeves.
Yeah, that's true.
Anders Drew says, the Grey Lady keeps to herself, but is there when you need her. Ravenclaw for the win. Caitlin Bauer, I'm sticking with Hufflepuff and the Fat Friar. Who doesn't love a friendly monk that just wanted to heal sick people with magic?
Hashtag Proud Puff.
Camilla Taylor, still Hufflepuff. The Fat Friar is clearly the best Hogwarts house ghost, with Sir Nicholas at a close second. And tweeted in to say, torn between Gryffindor and Hufflepuff, Nick is quite entertaining, but the Fat Friar just seems super chill and kind. Hannah Van Amber, still be Ravenclaw. Gotta love the teenage, quote, my mother doesn't understand me angst. Plus, she has some serious girl power.
Yeah.
Shania, I'm a puff, but I love the Grey Lady and her story. Cordo Peekaboo, hell of a name. I love being a puff, but I think the Bloody Baron is much more interesting and spooky than the Fat Friar, so I'd go with Slytherin.
Ooh.
Mackenzie says, I would definitely stick with Hufflepuff. The Fat Friar seems like someone I could totally split two pizzas and feel no shame.
I do that too. I when I'm with someone, like at home, you get Domino's, order two Domino's pizzas, and we each have a pizza. Yep.
And do you feel shame?
My roommate just did that last night. Yeah.
Any shame, Andrew?
I don't feel shame, no.
Do you let Brooklyn have pizza?
Well, Domino's has that special, you know, two medium pizzas for like $7.99.
Yeah, it's domino's.com/mugglepass.
Pumpkin Farmer Tom says, Ravenclaw and the Gray Lady, awesome name and brilliant backstory. Jenna Sargent, I'm a Ravenclaw, but would probably have to go with Hufflepuff for the cookies. What cookies? What?
Ooh.
Well, they're near the kitchen.
Oh. There's more cookies, but all right. Luna Eclair, the Bloody Baron is the only one who can really deal with Peeves, so I'm sticking with Slytherin. Megan says, I'm a Puff, but I would pick Gryffindor for Sir Nick. He's got the sass. Dawn Z says, Hufflepuff, Fat Friar seems chill. All the other ghosts have angsty backstories that make them awkward to hang out with. My favorite from Dominica Symbolic. Well, as a proud serpent myself, Slytherin's Bloody Baron does the job. What's the point of a ghost if it isn't scary?
Oh, man. Shade thrown.
What's the point of a ghost if it isn't? Well, I mean, in Hogwarts, these less scary ghosts seem appropriate because they add some character to the school.
And they're children, after all.
So, Micah and Eric, are you afraid of ghosts? If you think they're real?
No.
I'll let you know when I encounter one, and then
actually
I'll tell you if I was scared.
Which is never happening, because they're not real.
Listen to that podcast, and that's why we drink.
Okay. Do these podcasts promote us? I mean,
yeah,
you're always promoting them.
Like, you've thrown out at least like two or three on the show already. I got Potter.
You know,
Erotica, what was the one you just mentioned? And then we drink.
Well, I'm on Alohomora, and you've been on. Yeah, no, I think that my New Year's resolution last year was to listen to more podcasts and be more worldly and this, that, the other thing, and so I'm just trying to fulfill my obligation.
All right, well, it is time now for some Quizzitch. Last week's question was, what did students have to do for Snape's potions exam and for the third year?
At the end of the third year.
At the end of the third year, sorry.
Yeah. So for those of you playing at home, the students in Prisoner of Azkaban, for Snape's potions exam, they had to brew a confusing concoction.
Oh.
So... a confusing concoction was the exam potion that everybody had to make.
What is that?
Well, I don't know. It's confusing.
Yeah.
All right. What about for this week's question? I think Kate should ask. She should choose.
Yeah.
Sorry.
I think that a confusing concoction, though, probably confuses the drinker. So, like, it's basically a potion that disorients somebody.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not a poison. It just will make you, like, confused and, why am I here? Or what am I doing? Or, you know, that sort of thing. Yes, Kate, pick a book between 1 and 3.
I pick 2.
We should wrap up the 1 through 3 questions at some point. And doesn't make
sense. Yeah, I know. Well, I need to source them from somewhere else then. What is Gilderoy Lockhart's favorite color?
Lilac.
Oh, got it.
Oh, well, we shouldn't have revealed it, but oh well.
Shouldn't have revealed
it. Ask another one.
We're just going to do Quizzitch the same.
Here we go.
The same day.
I'm going to ask one, and nobody, you guys won't be able to guess, I bet. How many died in the Battle of Hogwarts on the side of Hogwarts and the Order? So how many died on Team Harry?
Too many.
Yeah.
Oh, that's so true. But we will reveal the answer on next week's episode.
Andrew, I got one question before we move on.
Okay.
Where does, I mean, how do you count lavender for?
Oh, you're going to have like a standard error, like plus or minus.
I'm just going to have to trust the person who came up with this trivia question. I think, let's assume lavender is one of the fallen. Much as I hate to admit it, let's assume that. Thanks, everybody, for listening to the podcast. We'd like to plug MuggleCast.com. We have everything there concerning this show. You can follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/MuggleCast, facebook.com/MuggleCast as well. Our Patreon is patreon.com/MuggleCast. And your support keeps the show going on a weekly basis, so we greatly appreciate it. We appreciate your support, Kate. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me. It was lots of fun.
I'm good. Good. Hope you don't see any ghosts ever, but you won't, because we agree they're not real.
Agreed.
And thank you, everybody, for listening. I'm Andrew.
I'm Micah.
I'm Eric.
And I'm Kate.
See everybody next time. Goodbye.
Bye.
Goodbye.
Bye.